You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, is the unfatigued and refreshed Michael Engel. Refreshed because, as you probably are aware, we did not record a show last week. We called it a getaway day. It was
pretty much some
travel. Both Mike and I were traveling for, believe it or not, this is not our official job, podcasting once a week.
As polished and pristine and on top of everything as we are, you might be surprised that, we actually do not get any money for our work on this podcast from every week-ish.
Yes, from those of you shocked to learn that. So Mike and I both had things that we were going to, conferences, trainings, what have you, for our real day jobs last week, so we weren't able to record, but we're here, we're back, and it's hot stove week number one for the Royals. It seems like it came much sooner than normal this year because there was an extra month of baseball the Royals had that normally we just spend talking about possible moves. So we're going to jump right in here and start with we're going to talk about the moves that are out there that the Royals have in some way, even if it's tangentially, been connected to, and give maybe a little bit of a give some our opinions on whether they'd be a good fit and what the likelihood is that they're gonna that they could be in Kansas City in 2015. So there's actually been, you know, a slightly decent amount of names that have been connected with the Royals. So we've got a few to delve into. Mike, why don't you start us off? Give us a first name and throw it out there. And we'll discuss.
Okay. Well, gosh. Okay. Where to start?
Where to start? Always a good question.
Well, I mean, there was a report on Fox Sports Kansas City that the Royals had reached out or had a visit from one of the agents of John Lester, who is probably not I would say probably number two on the free agent scale, like the number two free agent. I'd say Max Scherzer is probably number one. But, you know, Lester.
You would put Scherzer above. I know Scherzer just won a Cy Young last year, but you would put him above Lester as a free agent?
I don't have their age in front of me. I think he's younger too. I could be wrong. They're probably about the same age. They're both really good pitchers, and really they're both going to cash in as the good pitchers that they, you know, are known to be. So, but the Royals apparently have shown some interest now, you know, a grain of salt in any of these discussions, because I think they'd be silly to not at least check in, you know, and say, hey, is he, by any chance, is he willing to take 4 years and $70 million? And, you know, their side says, well, no, he's not going to do that. But, you know, there was something Jeffrey Flanagan reported on that they had talked to him, or at least someone from his agency, and, you know, they've kind of done their due diligence in that sense. And there hasn't been anything that's really come out as far as them talking to Scherzer. So, I mean, maybe that leak means that there's a little bit, maybe that's a little more smoke on the fire. You know, and with Lester, you know, obviously he's a workhorse kind of guy, a top of the rotation guy, would be a very capable replacement for James Shields, and especially when he's a couple of years younger. You know, the other fringe benefit is you don't have to face him anymore. So, you know, it's just like last year where he basically buzzed through him every year, every game except for that wild card game. And really, he's still kind of got through them other than that, you know, his last inning against them.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, he would be...
If you can't be in a join him type of thing, right?
Exactly. And he would be a guy that would fit in very nicely at the front of this rotation, because, you know, you'd have Lester, probably Ventura, maybe Vargas, and then maybe Guthrie and Duffy and kind of mix it up that way, just to go left, left, left. I mean, I guess they could follow Vargas with Duffy, you know, whatever order they went in. Doesn't really matter. You know, I think that could be really effective, but it all comes down to the money, and he's going to be looking for something like, you know, $20 million plus a year. And the Royals, one, they're not the kind of team, even if you consider, you know, that they're probably going to be able to increase the payroll this year, they're still not a team that really feels like they're going to be able to make that kind of a splash, even though that would be a pretty big deal, considering that a lot of people think Lester's probably either going to the Cubs or the Red Sox or some other big market team. So, you know, at least they're checking in. I don't know how likely it is that they'll sign him. It's, I guess, a non-zero level that they could sign him.
I like that.
I really wouldn't anticipate it, but it'd be awesome if they could. So I guess that's kind of the big whale to kind of hope for this offseason. And that would fill one of the big gaps that the Royals have, which is starting pitching, especially at the top of a rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much nailed it. It's a non-zero possibility, but the likelihood is extremely low.
Right.
So, you know, I would absolutely love John Lester. I don't know who wouldn't. If someone tells you that they wouldn't, then they're just flat out wrong.
Yeah, they're not paying attention.
No. You always wonder, can the Royals do, like, is there a benefit? Let me get your opinion on this, Mike. Is there, in your eyes, let's take it in the context of this Royals team. If you're talking about value and the benefit that it provides, is there more benefit in signing up someone like John Lester for $20 million a year, and that's it? You're done. You're closing up shop for the rest of the offseason, and you're not. Everything else is going to come with bargain basement deals, promotions from within, whatever. I mean, is there merit to that, or is that from, if you're an organization like the Royals, do you look at that as a bad move? I want to get your thoughts on this before I delve in with mine.
If that's the only move they would do, or at least big move, I mean, I think that's, it would make it tough to fill the other spots that they would want to fill. I mean, I think they want to get a bullpen arm if they can. Obviously right field is going to be something they'll want to replace, or, you know, they'll need to do something with Kane in right, Dyson in center, and Gordon in left, but they don't really have like that fourth outfielder guy kind of swap in who's ready quite yet. So there's not really a great candidate to promote from within at this stage. So, you know, that might be someone that they'd have to go try to make a trade, kind of an even payroll of some sort. So, you know, I think there might, you know, if you can get by with it, and for the Royals, they're basically kind of sitting a lot of positions that they know that they have in place for right now, it wouldn't be too bad, because they're going to be able to bring most of the bullpen if they choose to. Most of those guys have, you know, are in arbitration at this point, but they keep them. And so if that was the only thing that they probably get by. Now, they would also want to be sure to probably take as many lottery ticket type guys as they could get on minor league deals. And, you know, hopefully that would become your depth, because that's kind of what you're banking on. You'd have to really scour and play bargain basement kind of shopper for that kind of thing. So I think you could get by with it. I think it's also, I think there's also some value to finding close alternatives that are more efficient use of your payroll and filling in, you know, with the supposed theoretical savings of not signing a guy for $25 million a year and taking some of that and putting it towards another position. So you're basically, like, you know, taking $20, $25 million and getting two, maybe even three players versus, you know, just one. It seems like they're going to bring back pretty much the same team unless there's some kind of surprise trade. And then you're just kind of filling in with, you know, one or two new big names. So, I mean, that's kind of about where they're at anyway. So I think for this team, it would be okay. I think any other team that has a lot of free agents or maybe not a lot of prospects who are close, you know, then it's probably a little more difficult because then you're basically banking on one guy. And in this case, it'd be a starter. So you're looking at 32, 34, 35 starts for that guy. So, you know, the rest of it, you're not getting as much impact. So, yeah, I think they could probably do it if that was the only move they did. But I think they probably also want to make sure that they get someone reliable for the other spots that they're looking for. So, you know, that I don't think, even if they did sign Lester, I don't think that'd be where they would stop.
Yeah. Now, if that was if that was your scenario where you'd sign Lester and keep going, that would be fantastic. But for me, it's something where, I mean, I've always kind of debated this, and I've always wondered, like, and there was kind of some talk about this stuff when Albert Pujols was a free agent, you know, and he was, oh, he's from Kansas City, and or not, you know, there's all this, he still lives here, and it's. He's not really from Kansas City, but he has a connection to Kansas City. He lived here for a time before he was in the pros. But, you know, would it be worth it? Ticket sales, all that kind of stuff. John Lester does not have the name that, as good as he is, like, he's definitely got the prominent name for, like, baseball nerds like us. But for, and, you know, your average guy knows John Lester, but doesn't view him like an Albert Pujols. So I don't think you're going to see the difference in ticket sales. But if it's me, and I don't know, I've always just kind of toyed with that idea of if it's really valuable to do that. And I think the closest you could come to just making the one move and done type of thing is with someone like Lester. Yeah. Where, like you said, starter, 35 starts a year. You know, if he has a year like he did last year, I mean, I haven't looked at his numbers recently, but I mean, you're looking at a 4 or 5 WAR player, and you know, that's a lot of value. So I don't know. It's tough. It probably would not be prudent in the Royals situation, especially considering you've got with the park that the Royals have, it's kind of like almost a market inefficiency to exploit in itself, because you can get guys like your Jeremy Guthries and Jason Vargases of the world, and they can come in and have success at Kauffman like they've never had before, really. So, you know, like, and kind of like to your point where you said, you know, it's almost better to find a cheaper, lesser alternative. You know, that's where Dayton Moore has had some success actually and deserves some credit, because he's been able to find those guys that, you know, whether it's intentional or not, and I think that's up for debate in some circles, you know, he's been able to find guys that have been perfect fits for this ballpark, and it's really made, you know, it's shown up in the results. So who knows? I would love John Lester, and I wouldn't be upset if that was the only, if they did the one and done thing and that was the only move they made, and they said, okay, we've got, you know, Jorge Bonifacio down in the minors. We think he can be our right fielder, and so we don't need to sign anybody there. And we've got, you know, I don't know. We've got Eric Kratz already, so we can. Or I don't even. Is he still under contract? He's still under team control, or is he a free agent now?
He's still around.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got Kratz, so we can keep him as the backup catcher. You know, we've got Colon, so he can be the, you know, start the year as the backup infielder, all that stuff. So, you know, if that's what the route that they go, I wouldn't necessarily be disappointed. But the more prudent thing, if I'm being honest, is probably to take that 20 mil and spread it around a little bit.
But, you know, the thing is, Les not the only guy out there. And, you know, like we were talking about, there's alternatives. There's a lot of different ways to go. I mean, they need to fill in right field, and you know, Billy Butler's more than likely gone. So there's kind of another spot to kind of look at. They could either go more flexible, or they could find a guy who's more of a DH type, or maybe a hybrid, a guy who plays half in right and half at DH or something like that. So, I mean, they've got options, you know, and even if they don't sign Lester, which I think is the expected course of action, I mean, they've got a lot of other guys. There hadn't been a lot of activity, it hadn't seemed like to me so far. I mean, today there
it
was
kind of well, there was a little bit of a little mini flurry today.
Yeah, there's like there was like Russell Martin. The Royals weren't in on him, and then there was kind of that unexpected trade Hayward to the Cardinals for Shelby Miller, which, all right, that's fair enough trade, but that's kind of been it. There just hasn't been a lot. I think they just had the GM meetings last week, I think it was, and the owner or the winter meetings are going to be coming up here in a couple weeks. So I think that's probably when things are going to really kind of take off. Right now, people are just kind of positioned and kind of seeing what happens. So, you know, in the meantime, we really just have kind of scraps to go off of.
Yeah. And the owners, I feel like the owners meetings is kind of where they just like start the discussion. Like, you know, Dayton Moore might walk up to Billy Bean at a bar and just be like, you know, Alex Gordon. And walk away and just see, you know, just kind of see.
Just put the bug in his ear.
Yeah, you know, what reaction that elicits. And I'm not saying he wants to or should trade Alex Gordon. That was just being a little funny example. But I think that's kind of where where everything gets started. And then you get down to the winter meetings and people are the season has kind of worn, the ending of the season has worn off and people are really ready to get down to business and see if they can't make something happen. So that'll most likely be, as you said, when it occurs. And that's usually, you know, Dayton Moore's history, that's been the case. So,
yep.
You know, if there's going to be something that happens, you know, we'll see it there.
And it's been every other year. So, you know, 2010, it was winter meetings, and then like within a couple of days, Zach Greinke was traded, and then winter meetings 2012. It was, you know, a couple of days after that, James Shields came over. So, not that he's looking every other year, but just you know,
yeah, he does.
It does kind of fit that way. So
yes,
you know, so
every time there was a big deal that needed to be made, that was when it was made.
Yeah, and they're in that kind of same spot. So, trying to find you know right fielder or. Starting pitcher. I mean, starting pitching is a tough one to kind of peg on the trade market because, you know, it's just like when they got Shields, it's going to take a top prospect and more to bring those on. So I don't see them doing that, partly because I don't think their system's as strong as it was with, you know, those kind of top tier prospect guys.
No.
Though we do owe everybody a prospect show at some point. I hardly paid attention to them, frankly, all season.
Yeah, this... I mean,
it's funny what a playoff run does to pay attention to your farm system.
I remember seeing, like, you hear people talking about, or we, you know, talk to other fans on Twitter or whatnot and say, like, oh, you know, what about so and so, some prospect or whatever? And they wouldn't really have much knowledge. And I'm just like, how do you not know your own farm system? You know, it's like,
right.
Well, it makes sense. When you have a winning ball club, you have more important things to pay attention to. And it's, you don't have to say, oh, man, I can't wait until so and so's here.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I also have been lacking in the prospect department, but
oh, well.
we will gather a show. We've got plenty of off season, and we will gather that show for you.
Yep.
but now let's move forward. We talked John Lester. So who's next on the list of possible
possible
Royals targets here?
This is literally back of the envelope kind of stuff. Just a lot of names. Well, you know, Ryan Howard was a name that came up as a.
Oh yes.
There was some report, and I think it was like a national reporter was like, "Oh, the Royals at least you know were." Oh, I don't remember how it was worded, but how it was worded was much different than how it played among fans. It was worded in some way like they've kind of listened about Ryan Howard in a
yes.
trade, and. Somehow within like 15 minutes that blew up into the Royals are very interested in Ryan Howard and you have to analyze every scenario that might come of this. And, you know, a day later it came out that it was pretty overblown. You know, any of these reports, it's always tough to kind of gauge what the discussion that led to them was. And I think the Ryan Howard one was basically like, most of the time, if there's anything coming out about the Royals, I think most of the time it's probably coming from the other party that's not the Royals. They don't like to let things out.
Yes,
not that any team does like to let things out, but the Royals seem to have a pretty good trap on that kind of stuff. And so
yes.
I think any of that stuff was probably coming out from the Phillies side. Maybe I always think that the reporter's asking his source from the, in this case, the Phillies side, hey, you know, has such and such team, you know, talked to you about this? And they're like, yeah, they've talked. And that's all that it really is. And then, you know, you can theoretically go put that in a report. Yeah, they've talked. And then it comes into this thing where people are like, oh, yeah, Brian Howard, who, you know, horrible contract. He's had leg injuries. I don't know if you've seen Ryan Howard, but he's a big guy.
I mean,
he's bigger than Billy Butler. People were complaining about Billy Butler and his shape. They would not like Ryan Howard, and Ryan Howard makes a lot more money and really not a lot of benefit. Like, he doesn't hit for average. He strikes out a ton. His power is dwindling too. You know, he's just not, he's not a useful player.
No, I mean, the MVP Ryan Howard of 2008, where he's hitting 320 with 35 home runs and all that jazz, that man is no more.
He's been replaced by a much larger, slower, worse Ryan Howard.
Yes.
So,
and
no way. I'm glad that one got nipped pretty quickly. And, you know, I mean, if the Phillies like took all the money, you know, and like they were basically just going to pay him and the Royals paid the minimum. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you can probably work something out for that, but the more money that the Phillies would take on, the more you'd have to pay in prospects. And that's not attractive either. So he's just, you know, I'll put it on record that there's no way they're going to get Ryan Howard.
No.
There's no way they're going to get stuck with Ryan Howard.
I won't even phrase it like that. I'll say there's no way they're going to take Ryan Howard.
Right. Yeah.
He's past the point where it's like, oh, that's a huge get for the
Royals.
Hey,
we got Ryan Howard.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, yeah, there's Ryan Howard.
Well, okay.
So, all right. So we'll dismiss that one as quickly as it was dismissed in real life.
Yeah.
So real life outside the show, I should say. Right. So who's next on the list, Mike? Lay it on us.
Well, let's see. There was some reported mutual interest between the Royals and Irvin Santana, which would be still there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Or was that an uh-oh for Irvin Santana?
That was an uh-oh for Irvin Santana.
Okay. I was like, dang. Who, you know, didn't have a great year with the Braves last year, but had a feasible, decent year. It was a pretty average year. But his strikeout went up, and I think his velocity went up a little bit too. So, you know, we saw in 2013 when he was at the Royals, he pitched very well. And, you know, another guy who fit really well within the team defense and the stadium. I think he's a pretty good candidate if he came in to give 200 innings and be better than average, especially with that defense and in that stadium. I would have very little issue. The one thing that kind of hitches on that is that he did get a qualifying offer and rejected it, just like he did after 2013. I don't think he's going to...
Hold on. Sorry. I want to stop you there because I had thought that... if you got a qualifying offer, you could not get that 2 years in a row. Is that incorrect? Obviously it is, but I had thought that was the rule.
No, I think it's as far as I know, it's just that if you go through and if you're traded within the season at the end of the year, you can't be offered. You can't get a qualifying offer because it was kind of that was built off of like the old type A, type B free agent thing. Because teams like the Red Sox and Rays would just, you know, in July or August.
Yeah, you'd trade for
you would just trade for someone. Yeah,
just to get the draft pick. Yeah,
just to get the draft pick. Yeah. So
and you had like that one year, I think it was 2012, where the Rays had like 12 picks out of the first 30 or something.
Yeah, just ridiculous. And, you know, guys who probably pitched like 3 weeks with them and they get the draft pick. So, but yeah, Santana, you know, last year was looking for like 7 years, looking for John Lester money, basically.
Yeah. Ain't gonna get it.
Yeah. Signed a 1 year deal. I think this time around his agency and he will be, a lot more realistic. And I think that might be something where you could get him on like a 3 year deal or a 4 year deal, which wouldn't be too bad. And that fits pretty well with the Royals because they don't want to get too tied down in those 5, 6, 7 year contracts anyway. just because those get really tough once you get to the back end of them. They're tough to unload. You know, they hit the payroll really hard, and the players aren't as good at that point. So, you know, I think that would work pretty well, and I think he'd be open to coming back. But yeah, I mean, there would be a draft pick that the Royals would have to give up in that case. But at the same time, they'll also get a draft pick when James Shields is signed by some team. And not only that, they'll end up they're already towards the back of the draft anyway, so it's not that painful of a loss.
Yeah, they're going to have the 29th pick, right? So is that how that?
It's by regular season record.
Oh, it is. Okay. It's not by, because the NFL goes by regular season record until you get to the playoff teams.
Yeah.
And then it switches to how far you went in the playoffs. So, okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, at that point, you're also going to have other teams who sign free agents who had qualifying offers. So they're going to forfeit their draft pick in the first round in some cases. And so the compensation pick will be moved up just because the other picks are gone. So the Royals really there could be a scenario where they sign a guy, give up the pick, and end up picking it about the same spot anyway. It would take the right team signing guys and a lot of guys not re-signing with teams, but it could happen. So, and I think Santana would be a pretty good guy to bring back in. He's older. I think he's 32 now.
That sounds right.
Something like that. So, you know, there's that to be concerned about. But yeah, I think he'd be a pretty good get.
No, I would really like an Irvin Santana signing. As an interesting side note, I think his ERA was something like 3.97 or something, which is, you know, like solid. But it's funny that our reaction to that is, you know, he had a pretty good, you know, average year type of thing. Whereas 10 years ago, someone has a 3.97, they're like a Cy Young finalist. It's amazing how much the offensive statistics and pitching have declined since the end of the steroid era. So just as an aside.
It's true. There's a fun little thing on Baseball Reference where you can go through and you can adjust a player's stats to an environment like Coors Field in 2004.
Oh really?
Or I don't remember what park it is. I think it's Dodger Stadium in 1968 or 67 or something like that. Just extreme run environments on both sides of the spectrum, and it's kind of funny because I think it was Grog, Grogg, a buddy of ours on Twitter. I think he put up a number of Mike Trout. And it was like one of his years he hit like 400 with a 600 on base and like an 800 slug. Just ridiculous. Like worse than video game numbers, just crazy stuff. So, so I mean, you could do that. You could like see how that translates into that kind of a run environment on Baseball Reference, which is kind of cool. Not really, you know, it's not really useful. It's just kind of a neat wrinkle they have on there.
Yeah.
But it also shows, you know, it makes your point of it's a completely different environment now than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. But anyway, though, he had a decent season, Santana did. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, I think he'd be a good fit. I think he would be amenable to returning because he seemed to kind of embrace Kansas City. Kansas City really seemed to embrace him. And, you know, before this past year, basically, when the Royals were steadily improving but still hadn't made that leap yet, there was the draw that you kind of hoped would be there of, well, you know, it's a pitcher-friendly park. So if you're a pitcher and you're looking, the Royals are improving now, and there's, you know, the park is going to do you really well with this really good defense. But now it's, you know, the Royals are an attractive place to play because of the defense and because of the fact that they're good now. So then on top of that, you throw in the park factor and everything like that, and you know he's already been there, he knows what kind of difference it makes and everything. I mean, then you're talking about, it seems like if you're him, it makes it a much easier decision. So I don't know. I mean, I think there is a decent shot at him if the money's right. that's going to be the tough part, because Santana, or more specifically his agent, appears to overvalue slightly his skills,
right?
Which, I mean, that's what agents are supposed to do, so I don't fault him for that. But all the same, you know.
Yeah, you saw what happened last year.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the issues in trying to get a contract. So, yeah. If we're going to put a number on it, if the John Lester is non-zero and Ryan Howard is zero, I'm going to give my number first, and then we can get yours, Mike. I would put Santana coming back to Kansas City squarely at 35%.
I was going to say 25%. I don't know.
That was my initial reaction, but yeah, I was like, that seems a little low, actually.
I don't know if that's far apart or not. I mean, it's like you said, it seems, you know, he's been here. He's seen what the Royals did last year. It would make a good fit. It just depends on the money. And I think 4 years, 50 some million would probably do it. But I don't know. I don't know if the Royals would want to do that.
Yeah. Do you want to be paying Irvin Santana $12.5 million when he's 36?
Yeah. I don't know if you do. But they're willing to pay Jeremy Guthrie. I don't know what they're paying him next year for the same kind of, you know, age. So.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, he'd be intriguing. But so far, of those that we've covered, I think Santana is the most likely. He's the best fit, most affordable, already has a history with KC. So, you know, probably not going to happen still, because he'll probably still want too much money. But it's the possibility is definitely there. More so than just a pipe dream or a discussion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think there's a definite shot there. That kind of, the idea of the two sides being mutually interested, it really cooled down over the last couple of weeks. But I mean, that doesn't mean it can't just bump up, you know, just as quickly. I don't even remember Russell Martin really being mentioned as being on the Blue Jays. Right. And then, you know, lo and behold, there he goes and signs with them. So. You know,
and interestingly enough, Russell Martin actually from Canada, and I believe that's three players I think I heard today that the Blue Jays have on their roster from Canada. So good for them. Learn something new every day, huh?
There we go. Good for them.
Good for them. So who's next?
Who else has they been linked to? I mean, they've been linked to a good amount of names. You know, some of them not quite as great names. Like Torrey Hunter is a guy that has come up before, and
Torrey Hunter.
I don't see the appeal there. It just doesn't work for me. And you know, he's 39. He'll turn 40 this year. It's true that his numbers haven't declined that sharply, at least at the plate, but. He's never really been a guy who will walk, so I guess that maybe that's the interest. You know, but last year had
actively seeking out guys who do not.
Right. You know, like 17 homers last year, which I think John Morosi pointed out was the most, some weird permutation of a stat to make it seem like it was really impressive. And, you know, 17 homers, I think, didn't Gordon hit 18? Or 19? He was at 19, yeah. So, you know, that would have been, what, second on the team or something?
Yeah.
But then again, you can't really figure that he would do that in Kauffman. A year older, can't really play defense like he used to be able to. I think if they were to sign him, it'd be in some kind of split capacity between DH and right field. Maybe that could work. But I don't really see it happening. The Royals were really, really interested a number of years ago. I think, what, 2007? Back when they signed Jose Guillen as kind of the consolation. And Hunter went to the Angels. But, I mean, that was 7 years ago. And he's a much different player than he was then. And I really don't want him to sign him. he's not going to go back to the Tigers. That's very clear. They went and traded for Anthony Gose, and they re-signed Victor Martinez. So there's not going to be really any spot for Hunter out there. So he's not going to be a Tiger next year for sure. So I would say the Royals should stay away. I still think there's a pretty good shot they sign him anyway, because I don't work in their front office.
Right. And see, to me, Torii Hunter is a Royals move for the old guard. Like, that's the guy that the Royals...
He's Reggie Sanders.
Yeah, that's the guy the Royals have typically gone after, the past their prime guy that the Royals are just like, oh man, don't you wish we had somebody like that 5 years ago? You know, and it's like, yeah, that'd be great, but, you know, the Royals need to realize that they're past that. But not that other teams don't make, you know, signings of kind of aging guys hoping to get that last 1 year or so out of them. But if it's me and I'm the Royals, I think I'm passing on Torii Hunter and, you know, looking more towards being a legitimate contender like they are, and trying to say, okay, we can get somebody better. We can pony up the little extra money. We don't have to try for the, you know, bargain veteran. We don't have to try for the, you know, the 27-year-old rookie who, you know, was highly regarded as a prospect but kind of fell off. You know, those days theoretically should be over for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
So I would pass on him if I'm the Royals, but I'm obviously not the Royals.
You're not
so
the Royals.
Who knows? So who knows what will happen? But they probably will. I think you're right. They probably will sign him. I don't know that they'll sign him saying like, okay, every day right field, get out there. I definitely think that a Torii Hunter, Gerard Dyson type platoon thing could work, or could be in the cards. And I don't necessarily think that's the worst idea ever, because, you know, as we've talked about before on this show, Gerard Dyson is the kind of guy who you don't want him in there every day, because he will get exposed. Okay. He's shown some flashes. He's made some good things happen. Good for him. But at the end of the day, he's just not an everyday player. And neither is Torii Hunter anymore because of his age. And if you're platooning him every day with Gerard Dyson, then, you know, you can extend that, his career maybe a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, if the money's right, I suppose it wouldn't kill me, but I'm not gonna, I'm trying to think of the worst move they've made in the last couple of years that I really, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to get up there and say it's, you know, like signing Jeff Francoeur to a 2-year extension for $15 million. You know, I'm not going to get that upset about it. Ugh. You know, but, you know, my Twitter comments, if they sign Torii Hunter, should I say when they sign Torii Hunter, will probably just be like, I wouldn't do it, but I'm not super upset. Let's see what else they do. You know, now if Torii Hunter is the guy, and he's all that, you know, he's their big acquisition, then we've got some issues. We've got some further discussion points. But again, those days should be gone where that's the big acquisition. They should have more than just Torii Hunter. So it'll probably happen. I won't be too upset about it, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Let's see, another guy they've kind of talked to, and hey, if you're talking about former Royals, Melky Cabrera is another name that's come up. He'd be interesting. Another guy who got a qualifying offer, so that would be something to consider. That would probably mean that, I mean, you're basically either or on some of these guys who got qualifying offers, just because the Royals, maybe they're willing to give up one draft pick, probably not two.
Yeah. And, you know, it's I do like the Melky Cabrera idea quite a bit, actually. So
yeah, I'm not opposed to it. He's kind of had some injury things here and there, but a lot of them kind of fluky kind of things. And he's also had some success post, what was it? The HGH. I don't remember what he got.
What was it? HGH.
I think, so, you know, he's had success after that, you know, which is a good thing for him. And to show that, hey, you know, theoretically, he's clean of that stuff. Now, who knows behind the scenes? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing, because if he's not, which we have no reason to say that he is or isn't, but
right.
if he's not, then you're looking at an entire season that he's gone. So I don't know. I don't know the MLBPA rules enough to know if the Royals could factor that into a contract and say, hey, you know, this whole thing is null and void if you get out for a year and we don't have to pay you. I don't know if that is something that they can do with all the bylaws and everything.
That would be tough with this union, I would imagine. But
that's my thought as well. But I would think that, you know, that would be the ideal thing to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think he'd hit enough to do it. The one question would be, where did he end up playing? Because he's not really a great center fielder of any kind, but he didn't really have a great arm either. And so right field would be tough. You don't really want to have to move Alex Gordon. You don't really want to have to move Lorenzo Cain off center. You know, the reason they'll do it with Dyson is because Dyson's really good at center field range-wise and everything else. Cabrera's not. And so,
no.
You know, that would be a big difference. But at the same time, you know, if he's the weak link in the outfield, not that bad. You know, there have been worse right fielders in Kauffman Stadium and other teams, and, you know, Melky could probably get by, I think.
I mean, Melky Cabrera played in the same outfit as Jeff Francoeur, so.
It's true.
There is that. But Francoeur was actually decent defensively, so that was unfair. But yeah.
That's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, if you got an outfield of Alex Gordon in left, Lorenzo Cain in center, and Melky in right, that is not something that I put on my list of concerns for going into this season.
Now, if it's Torrey Hunter, I think you just have Gordon play in center, Cain play in right center, and have Torrey just sit by the ball boy. You just play exactly. It like a softball game.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
there are worse ideas out there.
There are, and there have been much worse. Yes. I don't know. Some other names that they've kind of been linked to, just, lesser impact names. Emilio Bonifacio, there's been some interest, apparently. Yeah, he'd be okay, I suppose. It's kind of weird to see where he would fit, because they do have Colon, and I think they trust Colon to be a utility guy. But Bonifacio can play the outfield as well, so that'd be an option to spell somebody out there to, you know, rotate out with Dicey, maybe give Mike Moustakas day off here and there or something at third. You know, things that they've done before when they had him at the end of 2013, where they played him all over the place. Before they let him go to sign Bruce Chen.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know if to sign him. He's still kind of relatively young to be on the market. He's, you know, 30 years old and can play all over the place and really isn't going to cost that much. So I think if the bidding got too hot, they would bow out pretty quickly. But yes. I could see a spot for him. I just don't see him being an impact spot in any way.
No. Yeah, I don't imagine that as any sort of an impact thing. But he's one of those guys where, you know, it'd be nice to have him again if the money's right. And that's not a Royals are cheap if the money's right type of thing. That is a spend your money smartly if the money's right type of a scenario. Because he's just someone who, based on his skill set, he's just not worth a ton of money. But because he had a hot start to the season last year, and, you know, he's a decently regarded player, and he's got a lot of value as kind of a super utility type thing, then, you know, that could shoot up the bidding a little bit more than maybe it should. But like you said, I completely agree that I think the Royals might be in on it. But if it gets up there, you know, past maybe, I don't know, $6 million a year, they might just say, you know, good luck.
That's fine.
Godspeed. Yes.
Enjoy. We have a cheap alternative already.
In his brother.
Yeah. It's true.
Because although Jorge Bonifacio cannot play infield.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But
oh, well.
Good enough. It's what Colon is there for. So.
Right.
Let's see. All right. So who else are we getting? The list is dwindling here.
Yeah. They've also been linked to Brett Anderson, who's kind of been all over the place. He'd be a tough guy to get just because he's been injury prone. And the Royals, you know, they're looking at someone, you know, some way to replace James Shields. Well, James Shields threw 230 innings. Brett Anderson would not throw 230 innings. I think it would be almost criminal negligence to try to throw him 230 innings because he would explode. So I don't know what they would sign him to and expect out of him. Plus, you've got the question that, you know, is in the back of my mind of, you know, Yordano Ventura threw over 200 innings last year, which was a 50-plus inning jump on his season before. Danny Duffy finished the year with a one-pitch start in New York, where we were terrified that his shoulder had blown. Came back, had some mechanical problems, didn't start in the World Series or in the playoffs even because of kind of a stress reaction in his rib cage. So he's had a lot of stuff, you know, kind of where he broke down towards the end of the year too, and he threw a career high innings as well. So I don't think you benefit that much by bringing in a guy like Brett Anderson unless you're going to try like a six-man rotation and just kind of let your whoever your ace that you sign fill in and kind of get his regular work, and then the other guys fill in around him, which would be unique. But at the same time, the Royals would also have to, you know, give up a bullpen arm, which I don't think they would want to do. So that's a difficult guy to go after. But he's been kind of a good talent over the years. So I could see something happening, especially with, like, you know, good old incentive-laden deal with some options tacked on.
Yeah, the old, you know, the two-year deal with an innings incentive and a third-year option or something. I mean, that's like a like a Royal special right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that would definitely be an ideal contract for someone like a Brett Anderson who hasn't been able to prove the you know, the durability and all that. So it's an intriguing name. And I to kind of piggyback off your comment, also intriguing is that idea of the six-man rotation and not a full six-man, like, you know, every, you know, pitching once every 6 days, but keeping your 5-day rotation, but then rotating within that fifth position. And you know what? The last time I remember, the Royals and the Rays did it in the same year, was the last time I really remember teams, you know, going with the legit six-man rotation for an extended period of the time. Was that 2011 when that happened? 2012? Like when the Rays had, you know, like Alex Cobb and...
Oh, yeah, and they had...
And, you know, Hellickson and Shields was still there and David Price and...
I can't remember that. Yeah, I don't remember who they were using.
Matt Moore.
Yeah, Matt Moore was in that too.
That was Matt Moore's rookie year. So that would have been 2012, right?
Because
Hellickson was a rookie in 2011.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So yeah. I think Moore was the year after. So, but point being, I cannot remember if they did it like that, where they rotated that fifth day, or if they did it where they did a full 6 days and just rotated that sixth and, you know, just did a full six-man rotation. So I can't remember. And
I want to say it was just they just rotated a spot more frequently. But, I mean, they could have, depending on off days and things like that, could have gone full six.
But the Royals did do that same year, didn't they? Or I'm not making that up, right? Was that the year they had like they were still hanging on to Kyle Davies and still trying with Luke Hochaver? And
well, there was, I know they,
I mean,
went,
it was only
with,
for, it was only for like a month.
Yeah, they went through
like
with
Duffy,
like,
was still there, and or Duffy had, you know,
I'm trying to think of that. Paulino would have been around.
Yeah, does that sound familiar at least?
Mendoza. I don't know if they went full on with like,
or maybe they
just, six man.
Just talked about it, but it was a topic of discussion at the very least.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember it. I don't know. You might be making it up.
That's very possible. But the Rays definitely did.
Yeah, I mean, they had the arms to do it, so yeah. I mean, they might as well go for it.
I don't know the last time a team legitimately did that, and therefore don't know how to point to anybody doing it with any level of success. No. And if it's worth trying, So it's, I don't know, but it is something that should be on the table. We'll put it that way.
Right.
Because it's, you know, you can save your pitchers that way. You can elongate some of the younger guys. You can, it allows them to stretch out a little bit more, and it gives, you know, your Yordano Venturas and Danny Duffy's of the world just a little bit more time to ease into the roles that we all want them to have. So
I think that would be something. And we'll just move on to the last name. There's a name that I'm leaving off, but we're going to get that in the next segment.
Okay.
Because just because.
Just because. Just because Michael Engel says so.
Just because. But the other guy is Justin Masterson, who, you know, had a good year with the Indians not too long ago, and last year just wasn't that good. Finished the year with the Cardinals, mostly pitching in relief. You know, he's someone that I think could be a pretty cheap option. You know, kind of a low risk, maybe high reward. It's just tough with him because, you know, when you're looking at a team like the Royals who really want to fill in a top spot and also need depth, he couldn't be the only guy that they got because you just don't know what you're going to get out of him.
Yeah.
But he's kind of come up as somebody just like today as a name that they've kind of been linked to. And I could see the appeal, ground ball guy. He's, you know, generally throws strikes. You know, that would work pretty well in Kauffman Stadium. That worked pretty well anywhere, really. Don't walk guys and put the ball on the ground. That's pretty good.
I like those odds.
Yeah, but he's still got to be able to do that. And so that's a question to be answered by whoever ends up signing him. And again, comes down to the money. I mean, if you know, he wants to sign somewhere for $3 million, that's fine.
Boom.
I don't think anybody's going to complain about that. But
sign him up.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, why not? But, you know, we'll see if that's what happens. It's kind of tough to really expect that. And, you know, but that's another name that's kind of come up. And, you know, the Royals, they would do well to look at whatever options they can really find. Last year, it seemed like pitching depth would be an issue. Thankfully, most everybody stayed healthy for the, you know, most of the time. Liam Hendricks filled in one good start, so there was that. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, the starts that weren't started by basically Shields, Vargas, Guthrie, Duffy, or Ventura were basically, you know, track meets by the other team. So you don't want to see that. You don't want that to be something that you run into. So if the Royals, you know, if it was something where the Royals could get him cheap and kind of stash him as a sixth starter as kind of a backup, that wouldn't be too bad. But it's really tough to play that game too, because, you know, then you get into trying to sneak guys into the minors and skip starts and things like that. So I don't know how likely that is, but interesting. And, you know, maybe Dave Island could see something and work some magic like he did with Guthrie to kind of get him back into being, you know, relevant after, you know, kind of his rough start in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that Island has worked a little bit of magic there. So,
true.
Intriguing name. Again, just kind of fuel for the fire, if you will, of that, that hot stove action. But with that, I think we're going to go ahead and take our first break here. And then when we come back, we've got we're gonna have a little 1980s TV show dream sequence here of the perfect world that consists of the dream moves that we would like the Royals to make in the offseason. So stick with us, and we'll get back to that on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters. Talking to the wall.
or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through the break here. And as I mentioned before, we had our little break. We are going to talk about our ideal world dream scenarios for these Kansas City Royals in 2015 or 2014, 2015 offseason. What moves we would like them to make. We've singled out a few that would make the team better and are, even though we're in our ideal dream world, they're actually attainable in the real world, but would probably only happen in the dream world. So, Mike, let's start with you. Give me your first dream move.
Okay, well, I don't know who to start with.
It's tough, I know.
I mean, we should probably lead with who would probably have the biggest splash in the news, and that would be if they were to sign 24-year-old Cuban refugee Yasmani Tomas.
Yes.
That would be crazy. The Royals, they've dabbled in the Cuban market. They got Noel Arguelles,
They got burned hard.
That did not work out. They were actually able to re-sign him to a minor league deal after his original deal blew up. Fittingly.
Kind of like his arm. Hey.
Yeah. So, he'll still be there somewhere. But Tomas, 24 years old. He's like 6'2", 6'3". One of the top five Cuban prospects out there. And the Royals worked him out. On Friday, it was his birthday. The Royals were in the Dominican. They watched him work out. They, watched him at all fields. And there seems to be a reportedly really strong interest. Now, the only question is, like we brought up, it's the money. And what kind of contract would this guy get? Now, just looking at MLB trade rumors, they kind of estimate like a seven-year deal, $100 million, which is a lot. And that's a lot to invest on a guy who you're not completely sure. He hasn't played in the minors, though. You also look at guys like Yoenis Cespedes, Yasiel Puig, just won Rookie of the Year. Why can't I think of his name? Jose Abreu. Why could I not think of him? But you look at how those guys jump up right away and have success in the majors. And I think that tells a lot about the level of competition in the Cuban League.
Yeah, which I was just going to mention that, which is so strange. Like, how good are the freaking Cuban players that those guys just jump in? But that's just
they're right in there. And I think that he might have to start in the minors briefly, but I think just as quickly he'd probably be up. And if you're looking at the Royals, you sign him to a 7-year deal. You're paying a lot of money. But the way that MLB trade rumors really pointed out was that's attractive as a length of contract, because that's basically the same amount of service time you would have had him for if he was any kind of other major leaguer making his debut. There could also be some situation where the Royals might, if they were to get him, say, for 3 years or sign him to like a 6-year deal and give him an opt-out clause, then he'd be a free agent at 27. Could go out, explore the world.
30?
Well, I mean, if he opted out. Like, if he...
After 6 years?
After 3 years, if he opted out.
Oh, okay. You said 6 years. So you said six-year deal with an opt-out, after 3 years.
Right.
I gotcha. Okay.
Right. So, that could be something where they could still kind of sign him and get the benefit of him, but not be loaded on the end. Then again, at 27, that might be his peak. You kind of want to have him there if you're going to make the investment. But you know, it's finding a way to afford him and finding a way to get him in there so that you can actually, you know, use him as the player that he could be. And so, you know, the Royals have a need in right field. He can play right field. Defensively, he's at least good enough. They worked him out at center field. He wouldn't stick there. But, you know, you could play right field, no problem. And he could step in right now and probably do it. So that is the dream right there. And they say that a signing is imminent, but we'll, who knows? You know, who knows? Yeah. The Phillies have been rumored, the Padres supposedly, and I think every team's probably checked in on him pretty much, as they should. You know, I mean, why would you not? Guys, you know, I think according to Baseball America, is a 70 on the power scale. I mean, wow. You know, there's not a lot of 70s in the power scale out there.
No.
So, you know, that would be something great. And even in Kauffman, I think, you know, he'd find a way to get it out of there. So that is dream acquisition one right now.
And I think, you know, you said 7 years, $100 million. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot.
But you want to break that down, and you're talking at just over $14 million, right? James Shields last year made, what, $12
million? Yeah.
So for a player that's younger and could have just as big of an impact, really, offensively, you know, as James Shields did from a pitching standpoint, then, and you're only paying $2 million, I mean, if you consider that the increase from, you know, having the success they did last season as your, if that's your biggest payroll, you know, if that's the biggest splash the Royals make, we talked about that in the first segment, boom, I'm on board, you know, I'm fine. And then just kind of get some more pieces around it. But that's not a ton. And since he's only 24,
yeah,
even a 7-year contract, you're still looking at sorry, hold on a second. Sorry. My wife has asked me to do a favor.
So. Oh, okay. Well,
all right, it's done. I had to open something.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so 7-year contract is really not that long, or it's not that bad, I should say, when you consider that he's only 24. And if you look at generally, you know, your peaks for most hitters, I think it's generally accepted it's in that 26, 27 to 32-ish range is when you're going to get the most value out of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they've got him basically locked up for that entire period and he turns out to be a Jose Abreu, Yasiel Puig type player,
yeah,
then that's worth the money in that regard. So
it really would. If you're paying in 2019, if you're paying $15 million for 35 homers, yeah, that's probably pretty good. Because I mean, the economics are just blown up again. Last winter we talked about Kershaw's contract, and today they finalized the Giancarlo Stanton contract, and he's going to make $333 million. When it's all said and done, it's just crazy amount of money.
Yeah, so that's another factor, because if you can lock him up now and he's giving you Giancarlo Stanton type numbers, then I mean,
you're that 5 years.
Yeah, that $15 million is below market value, like you said, in 5 years, and you've still got a couple of years left on the deal at that much. So it's a gamble, and it's one that the Royals typically haven't made. But you know, a few years ago, the Oakland A's typically didn't make those kinds of gambles, and they did on Yoenis Cespedes. I think it was like a 4-year, $52 million contract for him, I think, and it paid off greatly for them. Not only did he work out, but then they flipped him for John Lester. You know, obviously that didn't – it did work out and it didn't, because Lester played great for him, but it didn't get them to the World Series like they wanted. But regardless, you know, it was a smart move on their part and it really worked out. So, you know, maybe the Royals can – they've had that success. They've had that taste. Here's your big move, your big splash. Go make it happen. That – I agree wholeheartedly with you, Mike. That A number one right there, would love to see the Royals make that happen.
That would just be fun.
It would, wouldn't it?
The Royals just don't make those kind of moves. I mean, I guess the Shields is a pretty big move that winter, but you know, that it's not something like this where they've really never been in on the really big guys.
No.
Either posting from Japan or coming up from Cuba. So to do that would kind of be like, that'd be a nice foot in the door, and especially if it worked out. You know, it would be like saying, hey, this is, we're in on this.
Yeah, and I mean, you want to, they've already had a jump in season tickets because of the success, but then if you're coming in saying, hey, we could have the next Yasiel Puig or Jose Abreu on our roster right now that we just signed, then, I mean, the excitement's already at a fever pitch for this team, so that's only going to kick it up even more. I mean, it's a risk, again, but it's also an investment. So, you know, I mean, there's plenty of reasons to do it, just as there are some reasons not to.
Right. It's true. So that's the number one kind of dream. And we could have talked about him in the last segment, but I really wanted to save him for this dream sequence because, well,
it's probably a pipe dream.
It's probably what it is. I think it's better odds than signing John Lester.
Yeah, you know, it's better odds than any year, any of the players that we've talked about, the Cuban players. It's more of a reality this year for this scenario than in any of those years past.
It's true.
So, who knows?
Why don't you go next? On someone right. You want.
Next, we'll talk about, we'll go back to pitching and talk about, and this is a name that we talked about. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before when he was a free agent, but Brandon McCarthy.
Yeah.
So he's out there. He's a guy that, you know, I think you can sign him, and he can, I won't say easily, but he can step into that kind of James Shields role. I don't know if he would be the ace over somebody like Yordano Ventura, but he could be that kind of, you know, dependable guy in the middle of the rotation there, and or, you know, the front end of the rotation, and take some of the heat off of your Danny Duffy's of the world, and maybe in Yordano Ventura, even though I think barring signing a John Lester, Ventura is your opening day starter. I don't know who else they could really sign that would take that away from him at this point.
Yeah, after the way he pitched in the postseason, and just he just showed he's not affected by the – he doesn't care. He just – whatever.
No.
He walks up the mound slowly just the same. So there he is.
I'm just – I was amazed during the season and even more in the postseason at the poise that he had. And he's a legitimate budding superstar, and – within the next couple of years, it'll get to the point where he's the opening day starter for 98% of the teams in this league. But that, for now, we're still talking about McCarthy. He's, let's see here. I'm going to pull up McCarthy's numbers. I should have done this a second ago, but I was too busy talking about Yordano Ventura and thinking about.
It's easy to get distracted.
It's fastball. Yes.
Yep.
So, now, McCarthy he's had some injury issues, but
yeah.
when he's been healthy, he can pitch, you know. I think, well, I mean, he had 200 innings last year, and that was the first time in his career. But, you know, he had 170 innings in 2011, and he's battled some injuries, but I still think he can be that guy that, you know, he can be, take some of that pressure off of specifically Danny Duffy. I think that's the guy that you really want to, you know, I think Yordano Ventura showed enough that he can pitch another 200 innings next year and be okay.
Yeah.
You know, but Duffy is the guy that you still kind of worry about just because he's had so many kind of near issues that we've all just been like, oh, here it comes, dial up James Andrews, and it turned out to be okay.
Yeah.
So that's the guy that I'm mostly concerned with. You want to take some pressure off, as much pressure off of him as you can. And this is not – McCarthy's a right-hander, so it's not a situation where he's, you know, taken that left-handed responsibility, but, you know, from an inning standpoint and whatnot. But he, you know, he's coming off a year where, like I said, 200 innings for the first time in his career, didn't miss any starts. His strikeout rate was the highest of his career, just under 8 per 9 innings, and a walk rate of 1.49 per 9. I mean, wow, that's impressive. And he had a, you know, 4.05 ERA, but a 3.28 BABIP. So some of that driven by some bad luck, and that's not going to be the case.
Right.
In Kauffman with the defense behind him that he would have. So I think for him, that's got to be, it's got to be an attractive place to play.
So, I would think so. You know, because last year, I mean, even in, you know, he had a pretty average season by ERA, but, you know, you brought up his BABIP. Also, his home run for fly ball was 16.3. Usually that's going to be about 10%. So that, you know, if you kind of balance out for that, that works out to really make his numbers look better. You know, he pitched for the Diamondbacks and the Yankees last year, and neither of those are really good for just about any pitcher. You know, Yankee Stadium has that right field short porch, and Arizona is Arizona. So that's difficult. You take him out of that situation and put him in Kauffman, that's, you know, night and day. What I also like about him, you mentioned his strikeout rate has gone up and that his walk rate is very good. His walk rate's always been really good over his career. And generally, his home run rate is about what you expect, too. But you also look at over, you know, the as he's gone on in his career, his ground ball rate has improved, too. So,
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, so, I mean, he used to be a pretty sizable fly ball pitcher. And he's actually, every year, pretty much, it's progressed to where he's mostly been a ground ball pitcher. And I think you take a guy like him, his velocity's gone up, too, on his fastball last year. So, you know, 6'7" guy, finally had a full season of health. You take him out of those bad environments, you take those attributes of high strikeout rate, low walk rate, you know, an improving home run percentage if he's playing in a stadium that's going to be beneficial to him for that. You know, he never had real home run issues playing for Oakland. You put him in Kauffman Stadium, that's a really good combination for that guy. And if he can give you 200 innings with those kind of attributes, I mean, he'd be a steal. You know, as long as he can stay healthy, which is always going to be the question, but I mean, he's on my list of dream guys, too, because I think he'd be affordable. I think he'd be open to coming to Kansas City. And I think he's got the right mix of abilities that would really work well for the Royals. And, you know, like we said at the beginning, you know, if you got him and saved some money, you could go get somebody else for right field or for backup catcher or what have you. And I think he'd be a great signing. And plus, he's really good on Twitter as well. So I'd be interested to see him and Jeremy Guthrie going back and forth. And then they could battle off with Sal Perez and Lorenzo Cain on Instagram.
Yes.
That would be something. Not that that really matters. But, hey, you know, I'm gonna take my fringe viral video entertainment where I can get it.
Yeah, you know, and if I'm not mistaken, Brandon McCarthy's his wife is rather attractive. Is that my?
Yeah, well, he's a ball player, so I mean,
right.
All the parents out there, make sure your son plays baseball at a high level professionally.
Yes,
there are very few unattractive baseball wives.
Yes, but. Yes, as you said, he and if you look like you brought up, his ground ball rate very high last year, and home run fly ball ratio inflated. So if you look at his xFIP, which is, you know, the expected fielding independent pitching, which we've kind of discussed before, but the long and the short of it is basically what you would expect a pitcher's ERA to be if his home run rate was normalized and everything was normalized for park factors and defense and everything. So based on that, his expected FIP is 2.87. So, I mean, when your ERA is 4.05 and your xFIP is 2.87, and then his actual FIP was 3.55, which is still a half run lower. So when you've got that big of discrepancies, there's some extraneous factors there to where you can bet with some degree of certainty that he's a – not necessarily that he will bounce back and have a better season, but that he's a good candidate for it.
Mm-hmm.
So and he's one of those guys that, I mean, even still, his WAR last year was 3.0. So, I mean, he played on a couple – you know, the Diamondbacks were not very good, and the A's were – or I'm sorry, the Yankees were just an average team. So, you know, he still was able to put up some good numbers, and I think he'd be a good fit for Kauffman. I think, like you said, I think he'd be amenable to come in here. I think that's the guy that the Royals should put at the top of their list and target, maybe even at the very top, just simply because he would probably be the most attainable of the names that we've – of our dream names that we've mentioned so far. So I think that would be a fantastic move on their part.
Well, I'm sold, obviously.
Obviously.
All right. Hit us on my list too.
Yes, hit us up. What's your next list?
I would also, you know, we haven't talked about any potential trades, which is just kind of like generally I can't speculate on trades unless there's like actual like reports of
like
names listed.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, in 2012, it was basically, okay, we knew Will Myers was going to get traded for James Shields or John Lester. It was just a matter of filling in the gaps on either side.
Yeah.
We knew that was going to happen. You know, then I think you can speculate on what might come in with that. But otherwise, you know, anytime someone asks me, hey, what do you think you could get for you? What could we offer for this guy in a trade? I just hate that question. Because it's never going to be accurate. And I think you're always going to be running into people who overvalue their own team's prospects and think that the other team is going to be very willing to deal. My rule of thumb is if the deal that you think is brilliant and is a slam dunk deal that your team would take in a second, then it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So I don't like to talk trades too much, but I will talk about a player who could be available for trade. I just don't have any clue what the Royals would give up for him or what his team, the Mariners, would be looking for. And this guy is Michael Saunders, who, for whatever reason, the Mariners just seem convinced that they don't want any part of him on their team. I don't know why. It just seems like they've always been kind of ready to move him. But he's a player who can play pretty good defense. He's got a little bit of power. He can get on base. You know, he's very complete. I would say he's maybe more of the – he's kind of like if you took David DeJesus' skill set, you know, where it's all – you know, he contributes in every little way, but nothing's really exceptional. But you kind of bump them up a little bit because he's better than David DeJesus was. I think that would be a good description of Michael Saunders. And if – the Mariners are willing to give him up, you know, for, you know, say a top 10 prospect and maybe another intriguing guy that they like in the top 20. I think that's worth doing. You know, he would fill the gap in right field. He'd be able to play defense. And I think he'd be able to fit pretty nicely in the Royals lineup. So that's a guy that I would like to get if for some reason they're unable to sign Yasmani Tomas, which they should do. But if they don't, you know, they have other options. And I think Saunders could be a guy that would be out there.
Yeah, you know, I think you're on the right track with this. I think it would be a really solid move. I'm not sure what his contract situation is like, but he's young, 27. He's probably still – oh, hold on. I have it pulled up on Fangraphs here. So he's on he's a free agent. No, you said he's a trade candidate. So,
yeah.
Because this says contract $2.3 million for 1 year's 2014. So must be 1 year left on the deal.
He may still be under arbitration eligibility too.
Yeah, but $2.3 million.
I haven't looked at his contract in a while. But
$2.3 million, if it's anywhere close to that, makes him a good, that's a solid trade. I mean, last year he had a 273, 341, 450 slash line with, you know, 8 home runs, 34 RBIs, and he only played 78 games. So, and nearly 10% walk rate, which is unheard of.
Royals wouldn't know what to do with him.
In this portion of the Midwest here. See, he would definitely be a valuable piece to this team. And I mean, I think he'd be a good fit. You know, again, it just matters what they would give up for him. And this is one of those scenarios where you would hope that for what it kind of like what you were saying, where for whatever reason, the Mariners don't seem to think he fits, you know, that's where a lot of the teams that are successful that don't have LA Dodgers, New York Yankees type money, excuse me, become, you know, continue their success because they can identify talent that other teams undervalue. Yep. So if that's where the Royals are at and they think this guy can bring them some more value than what the Mariners think, pull the trigger on that, see what you can get, see how much it takes to get him and bring him in.
Yeah. he's Canadian too, apparently, it looks like.
There it is. So who knows, maybe the Blue Jays will go after him.
they might.
They very well might. Maybe that's their goal, to have an entire Canadian roster. That'd be interesting.
That'd be difficult.
But it would be difficult. But we'll stick with the trades now, and I'll bring up my next thing. And this is where we're really crossing over into the ideal world scenario. And I'm going to throw this out there. And just stick with me for a second. In terms of a trade, I think the Los Angeles Dodgers have a lot in their outfield right now, and someone like Matt Kemp is rumored pretty strongly to be available on the trade market. Problem right away, before anybody says anything, Matt Kemp costs $20+ million a year. So that is an issue. The Royals cannot, will not, should not pay that kind of money. Now, the thing of it is, the Dodgers have a very, very good prospect named Jock Peterson in the minor leagues. That's actually who I would most likely want to get from the Dodgers,
yeah,
if I could, but
you're not.
He's not available. So the Dodgers know how good he is, too. They're not going to let him go. They've also got Andre Ethier. They've got Yasiel Puig and Carl Crawford in that outfield. So they are stacked over there, and they need to deal somebody because they need to bring up this Jock Peterson because he's just been mashing in the minor leagues for too long. He's ready to be up. He needs to be up. So it's the thing where you could – I mean, the Dodgers have money coming out their you-know-whats, and they – if you could convince them to say, okay, I'm going to give you X and X prospect, and you're going to pick up 50% of Kemp's remaining salary, and then that's it. So he's only making $10 million a year instead of 20. The Royals can afford that. I think he's under contract for 5 more years at that amount. At least 5 more years.
He did like sign 7. Yeah, he signed a huge deal. Another one of those kind of mega contracts that has since been dwarfed. But I mean, he's under contract until 2019. He'd be 34 years old at that point.
You're still getting a little bit of his prime here.
Yeah.
And I mean, last year in 150 games, he hit .287, .346, .506, 25 home runs, 89 RBIs. I mean, he leads the Royals in every one of those categories, basically, except for batting average. But so it would take a lot to get that deal done. I don't know if it would take a lot in terms of prospects, but a lot in terms of negotiating and getting the Dodgers to pick up that money. And the more money they pick up, the higher the value in prospects has to be. So it's a bit of a stretch, but we're talking ideal world here. I think it's something that some team will work out a deal with the Dodgers. And if the Royals were able to finagle the right pieces in the right way, it could be them.
He'd be interesting. I mean, he's a former
runner-up to MVP. Former Gold Glover, though he's, some injuries have kind of taken it out of him. He's not nearly the stolen base threat he used to be, but the power's still there. I mean, he had, looks like 66 extra base hits last year. That's pretty good. That's going to play no matter where you're at.
Yes.
His power potential makes him a candidate to walk. He can, hit the ball. All of these things are very good. And it's just kind of that money thing. And I don't know how to make that work. It would be the Dodgers would cash in prospects. But they got to do something. They've got all those big deals. Ethier's got a pretty big deal. Crawford got they brought him over on a big deal after he signed with Boston. So, you're looking at just a lot of money that needs to move, and really just a lot of at bats you got to find for five guys. It's not a situation that they're not going to start the year with all five of those guys in the same spots that they're at. It's just there's no way that they can do it, and really feel like they've taken advantage of the guys that they have, because these are good players. It's just that they're big contracts too. But if they're willing to eat the money, they can bring in some good prospects. So he's definitely a candidate to be traded. It would be a pretty big move for the Royals to go get him. But like you said, if you can knock his salary down to $10 million a year, that's not too bad. I mean, it's funny when you see these contracts and how they end up a few years later. Yeah, it's still a big contract. But if you get it to that point where, okay, there's a trade that knocks it down by half, now it looks like a really reasonable contract.
Yeah.
$10 million a year for 5 years, that's okay for an all-star caliber hitter. You can live with that. So I think that'd be interesting to see how that would work out. It would definitely be a go for it now kind of move for the Royals, which is it's an interesting place that they're in, because they can kind of think like that too. And you're not used to them being in that position. It's usually see who you can flip and load up the farm system and try to hit on the prospects again. But now they can kind of go for it even more if they get the right mix of an outfielder and a starter.
Yeah, and I mean, if you can get Matt Kemp, someone like him, and get 5 years out of him, and even if that last year is only average or slightly below, then, I mean, that's enough to give up a prospect for, because you've got a prospect or two, because depending on who it is, I don't know if you're going to get I don't know how much value you're going to get out of one of them the next. If it's for, say Miguel Almonte, for instance, pitcher, I don't know if you'll get more than 1 or 2 years of value out of Almonte out of the next five. And even then, it's still another roll of the dice to see how much value you get. So yeah, with Kemp, you more or less know what you're getting. And there's a lot of value in that, even though there's a value. And I can't believe I'm actually advocating possibly trading a prospect. But, a World Series run will change some things. And with the rest of the team they have in place around them, I mean, you got a master like that in the lineup, and it changes things, makes things a little different. And it gives them that versatility they've wanted with the DH position. And you can still... The fit of Jerod Dyson becomes a little bit harder, because I don't know if you want to take out Matt Kemp late in a game just to put in Jerod Dyson for his speed. I think you'd have
probably more of a pinch runner than a defensive sub and pinch runner. Yeah,
you'd have to assume that it would be, instead of like Billy Butler as the automatic sub, it might be Lorenzo Cain, because Cain is probably a good candidate for regression. So, if he has more of a 2013 type season where he's hitting in that 265 range, it's a little bit easier to pull him out offensively, and you don't lose a ton defensively if you're replacing Dyson. So, I mean, that's a little bit tricky to maneuver that scenario, but that's one of them good problems to have.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my pipe dream trade for this offseason.
That would be a move.
Yes. That would be a splash. Or Yasmani Tomas. Either of those two would be National Sports Center leading story type news.
Yeah, that would be interesting to kind of see how that would be portrayed too, because that's like, okay, we got a taste of this. We want to stick around. Yeah. I have one more dream, and I guess it's not really a dream.
Throw it
it's
down.
Just a guy that I want. And we saw it last year when Sal Perez later in the year looked really bad at the plate, was not as good at blocking pitches. I really think that was a matter of fatigue and overwork. By the end of the season in the playoffs, I think he caught 159 games, which is a lot. It's a lot of games. And I think with the Royals, and we're assuming that Billy Butler is gone, hasn't signed with anybody yet, but there seems to be more interest here and there. You know, if that's the case, the Royals could put Sal Perez here and there at DH. Now, to do that, you kind of need a catcher who you trust to start. I think last year he was almost too good to take out of the lineup and out of, you know, from behind the plate. And so they didn't want to do that. And as a result, you know, he basically wasn't as good. You know, it's kind of ironic. So I think it's important to get a guy that you think could start 25, 30, maybe 35, 40 games at catcher, or at least come in and play there, here and there. And one of the guys out there is Giovanni Soto, who, you know, former Rookie of the Year, has kind of bounced around since, but has a really good reputation as a defender, and I think a lot of upside as a hitter. And, you know, I think if he came into a situation knowing that he was going to be playing, you know, maybe not every day, but would get his share as a backup, you know, I think he could come into that. And especially if the Royals are in a winning situation where, you know, they're trying to defend the pennant. It looks like their division foes haven't improved that much. You know, I think that could be something. And I don't know how much he would really want, but I think if you could get him for a couple million, I think you'd see Sal Perez get better too. I think he'd be better behind the plate. I think he would hit better. He'd have more time to work on those hitting things. He'd be able to work more on scouting pitchers and really looking at those, you know, where they've been pitching him and where they've been adjusting to him so that he can adjust again, you know, right back at him. So I think that would be interesting to see what would happen there. You know, just to see if A, my theory is correct, and that Perez is, you know, really needing a rest. But I think it'd also be nice to see, you know, another catcher in there, and just basically every game out, you've got a really good defensive catcher behind the plate. I think that would benefit the defense, the pitching staff, everybody. So even though he's not like a dream acquisition, I think it'd be a good one. I think it'd be really helpful for the Royals and, you know, helpful for Perez, which, you know, is good for everybody, especially since they've got Perez for a lot longer than they've got anybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's important. You know, they need to realize more so than anything else that they just cannot keep doing. And I think they have that. I think it was something where their plan with Sal Perez might have been a little bit different going into the season. And because of the nature of how the season went, they had to just kind of go with it.
Yeah.
And I think they tried. I mean, they tried to make the move with Eric Kratz and get somebody in. And I don't know if they just didn't have enough faith in him, or they just, you know, whatever the reason, they couldn't turn it over. And like you said, I mean, there was a long time there during the season, especially kind of in the middle portion of it, where offensively Sal Perez was so good you couldn't afford to lose him as an offensive player. And that was one of the big impetus behind, you know, allowing Billy Butler to leave, or basically, you know, sending him off, was just because they need that flexibility to where if by resting him, then they can continue to get that production from him the whole season instead of tailing off like he did, which we all have kind of theorized was because of his overuse. If you can cut that off and keep the offensive production for the majority of the season, or for all the season, then you're going to need that flexibility. So it would be good to know, to have a legitimate option back there. And, you know, Soto is not – he's not bad at the plate either. So, you know, he's – I think from a – that's one of those moves where if you're not a fan of the Royals – but you've seen what they've done, you look at that and you say, that's a really smart move by the Royals. You know, like if someone were in that situation and picked them up, I'd be like, you know, that's a good move on their part. You know, if the Giants were to, you know, whatever, you know, it's that's yeah. where, yeah.
It's like, oh, that's like, it's sneaky.
Yeah.
In its way. It's like, oh, okay. I didn't really see that coming, but I see where it works. And
yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's a lot of other catchers out there if they really wanted to. Guys like John Buck and Nick Hundley, I guess, is out there. And David Ross, who used to be kind of the really good kind of backup catcher mold. But, you know, he's like 38 years old. So, you know, I think there's other guys that they could go with instead of Kratz. I'm just not sure on Kratz. It seems like they've kind of walked this line the last couple of years where they have this guy, you know, the typical backup catcher who can't hit more than 170 and on occasion has, you know, some power. You know, Brett Hayes, Eric Kratz, guys like that. It's just, you know, I think it would benefit them to have somebody who could step in, who they rely on more, who they trust more. So that Perez doesn't have to catch 150 games every year because he's not going to be able to hold up. He's already had one knee surgery. He's had a number of different issues, concussions and other things. And, you know, the more you're back there, the more you're going to degrade. I mean, just look at his offensive numbers. He's fallen every single year. And even the power has kind of come up a little bit, but everything else has fallen. And I think, A, that's physical decline, and B, it's just he's not able to, you know, he spends so much time with the pitching staff that you can't, you know, there's just not time for hitting. It's why pitchers get to the end of the pro ranks and they stop hitting for the most part because they never work on it because they don't have a reason to work on it. And, yep. And catchers, you know, if they're working with pitching staff all the time, then, you know, that's going to be the priority and you're going to take, you know, lesser production at the plate if it means better production with the pitching staff. And the Royals don't necessarily have to make that choice if they get a guy who can, you know, spell him for a certain number of games. So I think that and Soto to me is the best option in there. Not only just, you know, if Perez got hurt, Soto I feel like could step in as a regular more easily.
Yes.
But I think he'd also be able to go in and give you quality work as a backup. So he's kind of it's not flashy, but I think he'd be a good pickup, and I think he'd really benefit the Royals.
Yeah, and, you know, I still question why they ever got rid of George Kitaris, but, you know, he's been through a couple teams even since then, so there's something about Kitaris that teams don't like. So I'm willing to accept that and move on, sort of. But, right. I completely agree. Soto would be a major target for them because, and it's something where you can sell it to where, hey, you know, you're going to play every day because if you're not a catcher, you're probably going to be, you're going to be our G8 or our DH, and then you're going to catch 40, 50 games, and, you know, that's going to be that. So, you know, it's not like he would be taking a complete backup role. It would just be a reduced defensive role because he's still got some viability at the plate, you know. Yeah. So
it's only 32. He's not completely done.
Yeah. So, you know, that's how you'd have to sell it. And I don't even know if you'd have to sell it like that, but you could sell it like that, and that would make it a pretty attractive role for him, I would think. So, like where your head's at, Mike. But with that, I think we're going to wrap it up here. We He said this was going to be a quick show, and I think this has been our longest of the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And the Royals made the freaking World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is a fun show, though. This was good, good information, good stuff for all you guys to kind of chew on. If you have any thoughts, ideas, or deals, or prospects, or whoever that you think the Royals should target, or you'd like us to discuss on the show, hit us up on Twitter. Michael Engel is at Michael Engel on Twitter. I am at The Jeff Report. You can also hit us up at KC Baseball Vault or Kansas City Baseball Vault at gmail.com. So you got anything you want us to discuss or any ideas, questions, whatever, throw it out there. We'll bring it on the air. We'll toss it out and we'll discuss a little bit. But yeah, until then, appreciate you stopping by. For Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.